Okay, now the Rambam's turn. The Rambam first now drinks the lizard poison, which is only smelly water. He drinks that. Then he drinks the rest of the bottle of clear water, which is only water. So what did the Rambam drink now? Two drinks of water. The Rambam had two drinks of water, and Dr. Salami had poison and two drinks of water. And Dr. Salami is smiling because he's looking at the Rambam and he's going to watch him all of a sudden to drop, he thinks. And all of a sudden, Dr. Salami starts to feel sick. Oh, my stomach! Oh, my stomach, my head! And Dr. Salami drops underground, dead. A dead Dr. Salami on the ground. And the Rambam, of course, is fine. What happened? Now, the other doctors, I didn't tell you this, I forgot to tell you. There were other doctors and other officers there, and Dr. Salami had bragged to them about his plan. He had told them the plan. Of course, they weren't going to tell the secret. And they thought they were going to have a good time watching the Rambam drop down, chas v'shalom, from his poison. But those officers and those doctors who were against the Rambam had a big surprise, because the Rambam was standing up and Dr. Salami was dead. And the Rambam explained to the king exactly what had happened. He showed him how Dr. Salami had made only water, smelly water, and the Rambam also had made water. But of course, in the other pocket, he gave the king the bottle of snake poison that was real snake poison. He wanted to make sure the king really has the strongest poison in case anything should get past his taster. And now the king saw that the Rambam again was the greatest doctor, and all the troublemakers and all the other officers that he found out were on the side of Dr. Salami. He took away their fancy uniforms and their fancy hats and their shiny shoes, and he threw them all out of the palace, and they had to go work in the gas station. And the Rambam got to sit next to the king, and the Rambam again was the greatest doctor and the greatest officer in the kingdom. Long time ago, Kinalach, in the time of the Rebbe Maharash, this is what happened. Every day, the Rebbe used to go for a ride in his wagon, because the doctor said the Rebbe needs fresh air. And he has to go for a ride. So he would go in the wagon, and the driver, the goy, would drive the wagon, and they would go. One day, they're going down the road, and all of a sudden, the Rebbe Maharash says to the driver, "Stop the wagon in that hotel over there, right in front of that hotel." And they stopped the wagon in front of the hotel, and the Rebbe Maharash went into the hotel. In the hotel, there were two boys standing there, two Yiddish boys with yarmulkes and tzitzis. One boy was about 5 years old, and the other boy was about 6 years old. And they didn't know that this is the Rebbe Maharash. They just saw a halakha-looking man with a beard come in, but they didn't know who he was. And the Rebbe goes over to them. He says, "Little boys, where's your mommy and where's your tati?" They said, "Well, mommy went shopping, and Tati is working." And the Rebbe says, "You know what your father does?" "Yeah, Tati has to go out to the farms of the Goyim, and he has to go out there and get money and things." "Oh," the Rebbe says. He says, "Do you boys know how to learn?" And the older boy says, "Well, I know how to learn Chumash." And the younger boy says, "I know how to read. I know how to read the Aleph Beis." And the Rebbe says to the little boy, You know how to read Tehillim? Oh, yeah, I could read some Tehillim. The Rebbe says, why don't you bring here a Tehillim and we're all going to read Tehillim together. And the boys went and they got a Tehillim and they brought the Tehillim. And the two boys, together with the Rebbe Marash, started to read Tehillim. And as they're saying Tehillim, all of a sudden the mommy came home from shopping. And she's coming outside, close to the hotel, and she sees the wagon of the Rebbe Marash parked in front of her hotel, because they lived also in the hotel. And the mommy knew what the Rebbe's wagon looked like. She said, look, this is the wagon of the Rebbe parked in front of my house. Like if the Rebbe's car was parked in front of your house, you'd see, hey, look, the Rebbe's in front of my house. I wonder if the Rebbe Marash is inside of our hotel. She was too embarrassed to go in the front door, so she went in the back door through the kitchen. And she peeked out from the kitchen door that went into the big room. And sure enough, she saw the Rebbe Marash sitting with her two boys at the table saying Tehillim. What's going on? She says, look, the Rebbe himself is in with my two boys saying Tehillim. And they weren't just saying Tehillim. The two boys were saying Tehillim. They were reading. But the Rebbe was saying with such kavana. He was saying with such halakhit, like davening on Rosh Hashanah or something, with a special kind of a song, a special kind of a sad nigun, and she could almost see tears in his eyes. What's going on? And they were saying to him for a while, and all of a sudden the Rebbe, he said, we can stop saying to him now. And he said goodbye to the two boys, and he started going out the door. When he went out the door, it's all of a sudden like he was listening or looking far away. He just stood there. He didn't even move. His eyes were looking out into the sky. And he stood there for a few minutes, and then he turned around, and he came back, and he says to the two boys, let's say a few more kapitlach tehillim. Okay. They opened up the Tehillim and they said a few more kapitlach Tehillim. And then the Rebbe left. He went on in his wagon. And as soon as the Rebbe left, the mommy ran out. Kindelach, Yingelach, do you know who that was? Do you know who was here in our hotel? And no, mommy, it was a Yid. We know it was a Yid. She says, that was the Rebbe Marash, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He came and was saying Tehillim with you. Wait till we tell Tati. Oh boy, this is special. But why did he do it? We don't know, mommy. He just kind of came in and was talking to us. When's Tati coming home, mommy? Oh, around supper time. Well, around supper time, the kinalach are waiting for Tati to come home. They're so excited. And Tati was that day out by the Goyim collecting money. Because what happened was, since the Tati, Baruch Hashem, he had a nice parnasa with the hotel, he used to lend money to people. And even the Goyim would come to borrow money because he was a very nice man. But the Goyim didn't always pay back the money. So the Tati sometimes, if the Goyim didn't pay back the money, had to go out to their farms. And he had to go and talk to them, and he had to ask them, please, to give back the money. And sometimes they would not want to give back the money, so you would have to make them a deal. And you have to say, look, you borrowed $100, so why don't you pay me with wheat or with apples, or maybe give me a cow or something to get back the money. And this is what he had to do. So that day he was out by a farm of one of the people that had borrowed money. And he was supposed to come back around supper time. Well, it was pretty late, and the Tati still was not home. And then a few hours more went by, and Mommy was very worried now. Where is Tati? It's so late. And it got to be about 11 o'clock at night, and Mommy was so worried. This never happened before. What's going on? 12 o'clock. 1 in the morning. And finally, after all of that time, Tati came in the door. He almost fainted on the floor, and his clothes were torn, and he had scratches all over the place, and he was out of breath. And in his face, you could see something had happened. But they were so happy to see Tati. Tati, tell us what happened. Because the kids were still up. They couldn't sleep. They were so nervous that Tati wasn't home. And Tati says, I'll tell you what happened today. And this is what the Tati said. He said like this. That day he was going to the goy to get the money, and the goy wouldn't pay. But finally the goy said, there's a few bags of wheat in the barn. You can have those bags of wheat. So let's go out to the barn and I'll give it to you instead of the money. And so they went out to the barn, and over there was a few bags of wheat, and the yid was ready to take the wheat, when all of a sudden the goy grabbed him. He grabbed the yid, and he took a rope and he tied him up. And he says, look, I don't want to pay you the money, and I don't want to pay you the wheat. What I want to do is kill you, and then you won't bother me for the money anymore. The yid says, look, I was nice enough to lend you the money. You don't want to pay me back. Look, let me go home, but don't kill me. I have a wife and children. Don't kill me for just that money. Now the guy says, I'm going to kill you. Then you'll never bother me anymore. Where's my axe? I'm going to chop off your head. Where's the axe? Didn't I leave it in this barn? And looks around for the axe. Then all of a sudden he says, oh, I didn't leave it in the barn. I left it in the house. I better go get my axe. And he goes now to the house to get his axe to chop off the yid's head. And the yid is tied up in the ropes and he can't move. And he starts screaming, help! Somebody help me! Untie the ropes! Let me get out of here! And a few minutes later, all of a sudden, the farmer's wife was coming by the barn because she had been in the fields, and she was passing by the barn going towards the house. The yid says, hey, please come here to untie the ropes. I have to get out of here. And the woman says, well, why are you tied up? Who tied you up? Your husband tied me up. He wants to chop off my head because I lent the money. He doesn't want to pay back. Now just let me go. Untie me. Don't let me get killed. And the woman said, if I untie you, my husband will be mad at me. Maybe he'll chop my head off. He'll be so angry at me. I can't do that. The yid says, look, untie me and then run back out to the fields and pretend that you were never here. And then he'll come and he'll see I'm gone. He'll think somehow I got out myself. And then you come later, and you won't even know what happened. You'll pretend you weren't even here. Save my life now, please. The woman says, oh, okay. And she runs over, and she helped him, and she took a sharp thing, and she cut the ropes, and now he starts to run away. And she says, look, if you run down the road, my husband will run after you and kill you on the road. Why don't you go hide until later? The yid says, well, where should I hide? She says, out in the fields, way out there, there's big tall grass. Hide in the tall grass, and that way you'll be safe over there. And later on, when it gets late, you'll go home. And don't even go home on the road. Go home on the forest, through the forest. The yid says, thank you very much. And remember, you go back out into the field and pretend that you were never here and everything will be okay. The yid ran out into the fields and he found the very big tall grass. And the woman ran back out into another part of the fields where she was working. And she just pretended that she was never there. And a few minutes later, the goy came back with his big axe into the barn. And he starts to look for the yid. He thought it was tied up there. And he just finds a bunch of ropes, and the yid is gone.
Hey, where's that Jew? I've got to chop off his head.
He got away. What's this? And as he's looking around, the woman comes back from the fields.
Hey, did you see the yid? Did you see that Jew?
What Jew? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just coming back. Well, what do you mean?
The Jew that was here to collect the money. I tied him up and I was going to kill him. And now he's going to come back and bother me because he got away. I don't want him to bother me anymore. Did you see him?
Me? I didn't see anybody.
Now, you tell me the truth. You must have seen that Jew here. Now, tell me the truth right now. Where is he?
And he starts screaming and yelling and making faces.
And she got scared.
Oh, I think I saw somebody run out into the fields. Where the tall grass is, maybe somebody's there. I think I saw somebody running there.
Oh, she told on him. She tattletaled. Uh-oh. He says, okay, I'm going to go cut down the whole field till I find him. And he ran back in the house and he got a big scythe. You know what a scythe is? Or a sickle? It's a knife that's got a big curved blade. And it's very sharp and it cuts down the tall grass. And the farmer goes out in the field and he starts to chop down the tall grass. And the yid is hiding in the tall grass and he hears this chopping, shoo, shoo, all of this chopping down. And he peeks out from the grass and he sees the goy cutting down with a sharp knife all the tall grass.
Oy vey, pretty soon he's going to come and cut where I am. And if that knife cuts through the grass, it's not just going to cut down the grass, it's going to cut also me. Chas v'shalom, oy vey vey. The wife must have told him where I am. Oy vey.
And he starts to say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elkinu, Hashem Echad, and daven to Hashem to save him. And the goy is coming closer and closer, chopping down all the grass. And now he had chopped down the whole field except for that little place where the yid was hiding. And in another minute, he's going to chop also that down and the yid will be finished. And the yid just sat there, quiet as can be, whispering and he davening and telling that he knew, and saying Shema Yisrael, and doing tshuva. And all of a sudden, as the goy had the scythe up in the air, ready to swing it down right where the yid was, all of a sudden, as a miracle, the goy says, ah, what am I wasting my time? I'm tired and hungry. Let me go home already. And he put down the knife, and he walks back out of the field, all the way back to his house. And the whole field was chopped down, except for that one place where the yid was hiding. All he had to do was chop one or two more times, and he would have had the whole field. And in the last minute, he just, all of a sudden, gave up, and he goes into his house. Mamash anes. And the yid was so afraid to move, he waited till it got all dark outside. And then he tippy-toed out of the field, and he went through the forest instead of on the road. That's why it took him so long to get home. And the forest was full of trees, of course, and bushes. and that's why his clothes got all torn up, and he had to go through the forest, not even on any road or anything like that, and just going through the trees and bushes until he got home so late. And he told his family, really, two nisim happened to me today. One nis happened in the afternoon, late in the afternoon, when the woman came by and she was able to untie me, and I got out of those ropes and I was able to run away. And the second nis happened to me later on, about an hour later on, when it was getting dark, when the goy gave up, and he went back in his house just at the last minute. And the woman and the kinilach, the wife and the kinilach, after they listened to their tati's the husband's story, they said, you know, something today happened in our house. A very unusual thing, besides your story. And we want to tell you about that. You know who was here today? You'll never guess. The Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe Maharash. The Tati says, what? The Rebbe Maharash was in our house? How can that be? Why did he come here? Well, I don't know why, but I'll tell you what happened. And she told him this story, how he was saying Tehillim with such kavanah. And not only that, the strange thing was, he said Tehillim, and then he left, but then he stood for a long time by the door, as if he was listening or looking far away, and he came back and they said a lot more Tehillim. They said Tehillim twice. And as the Tati was listening to this story, he says, look what happened today. Just at the same time the Rebbe was saying Tehillim the first time, that's when I got tied up. And that's when I was screaming for help. And that's the time that the woman came and untied me. The time of the first nes. And then the Rebbe left. That was the time that I ran out to the fields to hide. But then I was in danger again. And the second time they were saying Tehillim is when the goy was chopping down the fields. And the Rebbe left just at the time that the goy already went back into his house and I was safe. That was the time the Rebbe left, the second time. And the Tati says, it must be that the Rebbe knew with Ruach HaKodesh that I was in trouble, and he came to our hotel, and our kids and their Tehillim, plus of course the Rebbe's Tehillim, saved my life. The Kinnaluk, that's the Maise, but I want to say one thing. Everybody knows that a tzaddik, like the Rebbe Maharash, is a big tzaddik and has Ruach HaKodesh and has Helikite. But I'm going to ask you a question. If the Rebbe knew that the Tati was in trouble, why couldn't the Rebbe stay in his wagon? He's going on a ride, and the Rebbe could take out his own Tehillim and say Tehillim to Hashem. Why did he have to go in the hotel and he has to take two kids, a five-year-old kid and a six-year-old kid, and they were saying Tehillim. Wait a minute. The Rebbe himself, by himself, could have said Tehillim.
And because his own kid and his own kids are saying Tehillim for him.
Tell me something about when kids bichlal say Tehillim or learn Torah. What do the kids have special? Chaim, you know?
Because when kids say Tehillim or Chumash or something like that, it's more kavanah than if a grown-up says it.
That's right. It's more halik. Kids have the big koyach and the big halikite of the Torah. Especially kids. Because it's called Hevel She'ein Boi Chet. They're very pure. Very high madrega. Whose faces were on the Kruvim and the Kodesh Kedoshim on top of the Arna Kodesh? Was it the faces of adults or kids?
Kids.
Kids. And who did Mordechai HaYehudi gather together when Haman made the Gzeda that he wanted to mevatel the Gzeda? Kids. The Kinnaluch. Okay, so the Kinnaluch have the big koyach of the Torah. Akinalach, you should know that you're very lucky because you get to daven not only once a day and not only twice a day, but you can daven three times a day. Like a big tati davens three times a day. Shacharis, Mincha, and Ma'ariv. And not only that, the davening is just not one pasuk or two psukim. It's many, many psukim, and many, many tefillos, and many, many pages. Kinalach. Someone is very jealous of the kinalach and of the tatis and of the boys and girls and mommies who get the daven. You know who's jealous of you? The malachim. The malachim are very, very jealous. Because the malachim, they would give the whole Gan Eden just to be able to daven like you. What do you mean, Rabbi Bernstein? Don't the malachim daven up in Gan Eden, up in the Himmel? Don't they sing to Hashem and daven? Well, Kenalach, it depends what kind of a malach is up there. Different malachim have different kinds of davening. And every malach would rather be a little boy in yeshiva than a malach. And it says even that Malach Mechoyel, who's the greatest of the malachim, would give away the whole Gan Eden for one of your tzitzis. One of your tzitzis, just one. Now, Kenalach, most of the malachim, you know what their davening is? Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malay, Chola Aretz, Kvaydai, and that's it. One pasuk. That's all they get to daven. Now, some malachim are very lucky, and they get to say that several times a day. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, those are the lucky malachim. One pasuk several times a day. Now other malachim only get to daven once in a week. And the rest of the week, they have to be quiet. The whole week goes by, and all of a sudden they get their chance. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos. Malay, Chala Aretz, Kfaydai. And they're quiet. The whole week goes by and they're quiet. And they look down into the world. Hey, look at those kinalach. Not only do they get to say Kadesh, 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 they get to say brachas, they say Asher Yatzar, they say brachan tzitzis. We don't even get to wear tzitzis. They say Matevu Adonai Lam and Shema. So many psukim. They're so lucky. Altira. Now, those malachim are also very lucky. Because other malachim, they daven once in a chodesh. Once in a month, in 30 days. The whole month goes by, and they're quiet. Then it comes their time in the month. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malach Al Aretz Kvodai. Then it's over, and they have to be quiet for another month. But Kenalach, those malachim are also lucky. Because there's some malachim that only daven once in a year. In a whole year, they daven once and only one pasuk. They're waiting the whole year. They're waiting through Tishrei, through Cheshvin, through Kislev. They're waiting through Tevis and Shvat, and then they're waiting through Adar, they're waiting through Nisan, through Iyar, through Sivan, Thomas, they're waiting through Menachem Av. Finally they get, oh, my time is in Elul, and the day comes in Elul, and they say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malay, Kala Aretz, Kvaydai. And they're quiet. They have to wait a whole year. And those malachim are also lucky. Because some malachim have to wait 7 years. 7 years go by, which is older than probably most of the boys in the room.
finally comes their time. Oh, my time is coming. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malach al Arz Kvaydai. But Kinalach, all of those malachim, even the ones in 7 years, are also very lucky because there's a group of malachim. And these malachim do not get to say it once a day or several times a day. They do not get to say it once in a week or once in a month or once in a year or once in 7 years. They have to wait 50 years. They're standing in the Himmel for 50 years and they have to be quiet. They're not allowed to open their mouth to daven to Hashem. And in 50 years, they get to say one time, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Malai, Chol Haaretz, Kvaydai. They keep it as long as they can, Kvaydai. And then it's over. They have to famach the mile. They have to be quiet for 50 more years. Now, Kinalach, just think how lucky you are. And the next time you think of that story, and you find yourself on the floor fixing your briefcase, and you're missing Shalei Asani Aved, you're missing Hamavir Shena, or Hagoyim El Chasarim Toivim, or you're missing any davening, remember how lucky you are that you be able to daven so much. And the malachim are jealous. They're looking down from the Himmel. What a lucky boy. How could he possibly miss even one word? Even one nekuda? A chidik? If I had a chidik, I'd be the luckiest malach in the whole Himmel. I would dance in the whole Himmel if I had a chidik. Or a sedoil. Or a chaylam. I have to be quiet like a gailam. I don't even have a chaylam. And then we would never miss any davening at all. Not even a chidik.